Shri Shukadeva Goswami said.
Vaktaya
unto the devotee.
Etam
this.
Prapanaya
unto one who is fully surrendered.
Who fully surrendered?
Vidyam
transcendental knowledge.
Adishya
instructing.
Narada.
The great sage Narada.
Yehau
left.
Angirasa.
The great saint
Angira.
Sakam
within.
Dhamma
for the topmost
planet.
Swayambhuvam
belonging to
Lord Brahma.
Prabho,
O King.
Translation.
Sri Shukadeva Goswami
continued,
Narada, having
become the spiritual
master of Chitraketu,
instructed
him fully in
this prayer
because Chitraketu
was fully
surrendered.
O
King Parikshit,
Narada
then left
with the great
sage Angira
for the
topmost planet
known as
Brahma Loka.
You can repeat.
Sri Shukadeva
Goswami continued.
Narada,
having become the spiritual
master of Chitraketu,
instructing him
fully
in
this prayer,
because
Chitraketu
was fully
surrendered.
O
King Parikshit,
Narada
then left with the great sage
Angira
for the topmost
planet
known as
Brahma Loka.
So
purport by His
Divine Grace,
A.C.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami
Srila Prabhupada,
Srila Prabhupada
ki
joy.
When
Angira
had first come
to visit
King Chitraketu,
he
did not bring
Narada with him.
However,
after the death
of Chitraketu's son,
Angira
brought Narada
to instruct
King
Chitraketu
about Bhakti Yoga.
The
difference was
that in the
beginning, Chitraketu
was not in
a temperament of
renunciation.
But
after the death of
his son,
when he was
overwhelmed by
his great plight,
he was
awakened
to the
platform of
renunciation by
instructions
regarding the
falsity of this
material world and
material
possessions.
It
is only at this
stage
that Bhakti Yoga
can be
instructed.
I'll repeat
that.
It
is only
at this stage
that Bhakti Yoga
can be instructed.
As long as
one is attached
to material
enjoyment,
Bhakti Yoga
cannot be
understood.
This is
confirmed in the
Bhagavad Gita
in the second
chapter,
text
44.
Bhogaishvarya
prasatanam
kaya paritta
chetasam
vyavasayatmikhabuthi
samadho
navithiyate.
In
the minds of those
who are too
attached to sense
enjoyment and
material opulence
and who are
bewildered by such
things,
the resolute
determination
of devotional
service
to the
Supreme Lord
does not take
place.
As long
as one is very
much attached to
material enjoyment,
one cannot
concentrate his mind
on the subject
matter of
devotional service.
The
Krishna consciousness
movement is
progressing
successfully
in the Western
countries at the present
moment because the
youth in the West
have reached
the stage of
vairagya,
or renunciation.
They
are practically
disgusted
with
material pleasure
from material
sources,
and this has
resulted in a
population of
hippies throughout
the Western countries.
Now
it's yuppies, of course.
Now,
or
generation
Ys or Zs
or whatever.
Now
if these young people are
instructed about
bhakti yoga,
Krishna consciousness,
the
instruction will
certainly be
effective.
As soon
as Chitraketu
understood the
philosophy of
vairagya vidya,
the knowledge
of renunciation, he
could understand the
process of
bhakti yoga.
In
this regard, Srila
Sarvabhauma
Bhattacharya
has said, Vairagya
Vidya Nija
Bhakti Yoga.
Vairagya
Vidya and
Bhakti Yoga
are
parallel
lines.
One
is essential for
understanding
the other.
It
is also
said,
Bhakti Pareshanu Pavo Viraptir Anyatra Cha. That's from the Bhagavatam 11th Canto, 2nd Chapter, Text 42. Advancement in devotional service or Krishna consciousness is characterized by increasing renunciation of material enjoyment. Narada Muni is the father of devotional service, and therefore, just to bestow causeless mercy upon King Chitraketu, Angira brought Narada Muni to instruct the king. These instructions were extremely effective. Anyone who follows in the footsteps of Narada Muni is certainly a pure devotee. So, in the Sanskrit, Sri Shukavacha Bhakta Yayitam Prapanaya Vidyam Adishana Yadaha Yavam Girtha Sakam Dhamma Swayam Bhuvam Prabhu. So, Om Gana Timuranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Maha. So, a little bit of ISKCON history of Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that before Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, basically he couldn't get anyone to join his Krishna consciousness movement because people were hankering after the Western standard of happiness, as they still are in India to a certain extent. Just like even Prabhupada talked about people who came from India to the United States, and they said they were more enthusiastic about material enjoyment than the people who lived in the United States. And Prabhupada compared it to a certain animal. I don't want to offend anybody. But anyway, you know, one of the flying animals with black hair and everything like that. He said there's old and new crows. Anyway, so, so you know, the old ones, Prabhupada said, they've been eating stool their whole lives, so they're a little bit tired of the stool. And the new crows, they're really enthusiastic. I mean, it's just like... And it's just like, for example, let's say someone's, I hate to use an example, someone's been a brahmachari for so many years, and we've mentioned this before, and they say to him, we have this girl for you. You know, she may be ugly as sin, but because he's been fasting for so many years, you know, he's enthusiastic, wow, let's get married. And he doesn't even take the time to do a horoscope or anything like that. He's just like, you know, whatever. So people... in India, we're very much hankering after material enjoyment. And when they come to the West, it's an interesting phenomenon. They go to places like Disney World or Disneyland or MGM, you know, whatever these different places are in Florida and in also California. They go more often than the Westerners do. I've actually seen that. You know, I ask people in programs sometimes, how many times or who here has been to Disneyland or Disney World? And everyone raises their hand. Who here has been twice? Who here has been three times, four times? And they seem to go on every single vacation. Whereas the devotees who come from America, just like I was talking to devotees who were just in Florida, and I asked, did you go to Disney World? They said, no. So I knew they were born in the West. I didn't know that before. But anyway, had they been born in India, they would have said yes. And so... And Disney World, of course, is like an illusion of enjoyment. It's like you wait online for several hours. The reason I know about this is because I went to Disney World with a sannyasi once. Anyway, we'll mention it again. Just to see the rides, you know, for Mayapur, to see, because we want to do some rides in Mayapur. So you wait online for a long period of time, and they hide the lines there. I'm sure some of you have been to Disney World. They hide the lines, so you don't really know how long they are. You know, you go around the corner, and it continues. You go around another corner, and it continues. They're very expert in hiding the lines, like Maya is very expert in hiding the reality from you. And so then, eventually, you get to the ride, and you get, 10 minutes on the ride. Two minutes on the ride, like Super Mountain, and you get centrifugal force. And then you come off of it, and then you go to the next ride, and you paid like several hundred dollars to go through a day like that. And then if you brought your kids, the kids are screaming and yelling, you know, get me this, get me that, and they're impatient. And, oh, it's pretty miserable. Therefore, when we used to do Sankirtan, We would distribute to people before they went into the Disney World rather than after they went into the Disney World, because they were in a bad mood when they came out of Disney World. So that's like a material enjoyment. In the beginning, it's like nectar. In the end, it's like poison. And spirituality is the opposite. So then Prabhupada basically didn't win any followers. I mean, he had one disciple who really didn't follow him that well. He advertised in the newspaper, you know, just give me one of your sons and you can have the rest of them. And nobody responded to that advertisement. And then finally Prabhupada came to the Western world. And because in the Western world we had all this enjoyment, you know, like sometimes we tell people, especially preaching to Indian people, that we had all these things before we joined the movement. We had cars, we had boats, we had airplanes, and everything like that. And they go, wow. We joined the Christian. And Prabhupada used the same technique when he was preaching in India. He said, look, I want to introduce you to, you know, someone like Dristadyumna, whose father was the head of Seagram's, you know, a very pious company.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we had some people who manufactured gefilte fish, you know. And, you know, some pious things like matzo balls. But, and so Prabhupada would say, you know, and he had so much wealth and this and that, and they gave it all up. Wow. And so Prabhupada used that understanding of how people gave up wealth once upon having it to attract people in India. But it's a fact. I mean, we were all pretty much materially exhausted. Of course, not completely renounced. I can't say that, you know, I was, and all of us were actually renounced. It's just that we had been burnt out. So it's not real like Vairagya Vidya before Lord Chaitanya came in contact with us. It's not that we actually had knowledge and renunciation, but it was a sort of a smarshana Vairagya. You know, so smarshana Vairagya means like renunciation of the crematorium, or circumstantial Vairagya. It wasn't really Vairagya. It was disgust. There's a difference between disgust and Vairagya. Vairagya, actually, the word means free from passion. You know, Raj, Vairagya, to be free from passion. And certainly the hippies were not that free from passion. In fact, you know, all their peace rallies were simply an excuse to take intoxication and have illicit sex. Not all of them, I mean, I would say most of them. I mean, you have this Woodstock, and the Woodstock wasn't a peace rally, it was just like a music rally. And Mother Krishna Priya went to Woodstock. She was, you could see her in the movie. Mm-hmm. Chanting Hare Krishna along with the devotees. Not really. And so it was actually, it was, yes, they were disgusted, so Prabhupada caught us in the right time. It wasn't like this permanent Krishna conscious Vairagya. Permanent Krishna conscious Vairagya means you're experiencing a higher taste, raso vajram, raso priyasa, panam drishtani vartate, and then, because you're experiencing a higher taste, you're really nirapeksha, which is not interested. So there's a difference between nirapeksha and disgust. Nirapeksha just means neutral, whereas disgust means basically it's the opposite side of the coin from attraction. Like I remember, you know, my own so-called renunciation. I said I was just disgusted with my parents' way of life. I just said, you know, you're just working for the sake of working. You want me to be a doctor so you can please you, so I can please you. And what's the use of the whole thing? And, you know, and I was just like disgusted with what they were doing. And also, you know, with material relationships. So it was based on the negativity. So that was a type of Vairagya. You can't really say in a real sense it was Vairagya. It was more disgust. But Prabhupada caught us at the right moment. And he was able to tell us about a higher truth when we were in between the material world and spiritual, sort of like in the Tatashta Shakti. You know, Tatashta, like margin. Like it's something like Prabhupada described. He was, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes what does it would mean to be Tatashta. He describes it's like the shore of the ocean. That sometimes the waves come and the shore is actually under the waves, depending on the tide. And sometimes the tide goes out and the shore is dry. So that's a disaster shock. So we were like in this, you know, in between this tide and Dominant for a little while because of our disgust. And then Prabhupada caught us at the right time and somehow or other. Like Narada Muni caught Sitraketu at the right time. It's not that he had spiritual knowledge at that particular point. It's not that he was, in an ultimate sense, detached. But he got him. So it's important for us to understand when approaching people, that really helps. We look for the right time in approaching people. I mean, for example, one of the right times is that when people are in the hospital, or people getting ready to die, or people have lost a beloved family member. These are all right times, or someone has lost their job. It happens all the time, you know. Of course, Krishna says in the Gita, the four types of people approaching. People looking for wealth, people in distress, people who are inquisitive, and people looking for knowledge. So right time means we understand which one of those groups someone is in, and we act to meet their particular needs. And in this way, draw them into Krishna consciousness. Like someone's in distress, like Chitraketu, we could preach a little bit more renunciation. If someone's looking for knowledge, then we could present the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, you know, the epistemology and the teleology and all those other nice things. And, you know, people get very attracted to those things. And if someone's inquisitive, you know, we tell them why we wore a tilak. Why do you guys wear a tilak? What's that funny thing hanging out the back of your head? That's called a sika. And if someone wants wealth, we tell them, you know, akama sarva kama moksha kama dharavati tivrena bhakti yogini yajeta purusham param. Whether you're free of material desires, full of material desires, worship Krishna, and Krishna reciprocate. You hear all these like shruti palas. Shruti palas means at the end of the different chapters, one who does this gives him charity, gets like a million times more. You know, it's very enthusiastic. One who gives to the deities $1 gets $1 million in response. Or unlimited, actually. And sometimes I even think like that, well, maybe I should give a donation to the deities so I get something in response, you know, little Jewish blood. So, you know, so we have to understand how to approach people. Anyway, but to really come to the stage of real vairagya, one has to be materially exhausted. I mean, not just temporarily materially exhausted, but permanently material with no hope. You know, one has to be hopeless about enjoyment in this material world. And we can understand a little bit about this hopelessness by hearing a little bit of Queen Kunti's prayers in the first canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Queen Kunti was subjected to all these difficulties. Actually, as we were mentioning yesterday, this is pretty much a common denominator in the lives of devotees, that they're great devotees, that they're subjected to all these difficulties. Of course, that's probably a discouragement to become a great devotee. So you know, why should I become a great devotee and be subjected to all these difficulties in life? So Queen Kunti, in the this chapter, actually in the beginning of the chapter, you find the recounting of the difficulties that Queen Kunti was subjected to. Now, normally, you know, if I'm going to go to a psychiatrist and talk about all the difficulties I've been subjected to, you know, I want a little empathy. I say, you know, well, I could just put myself in the position of Queen Kunti and say, well, my kids, there were attempts at poisoning them. They attempted to burn us to death. You know, so many that she'd go through the whole list of things. You know, there was the war, and this was, of course, right after everyone died in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Queen Kunti's grandchildren died. I mean, can you imagine that? You know, the grandchildren died and all of her relatives died. And so normally someone would be singing the blues. So, you know, look what happened to me, you know. And of course she was glorifying Krishna. Of course, Krishna saved her from each of those circumstances too at the beginning of the 8th chapter. But if it was me, I would be complaining. Look, I joined the Hare Krishna movement, and all these things happened. You know, you promised me that things would be happy. You know, you promised me happiness, and look what you gave me, Krishna. You know, Krishna saved her and her sons, but everybody else was killed, basically. You know, her grandsons killed, you know, Manu and the five sons of Draupadi were killed, and Draupadi was attempted to be disrobed, embarrassed in front of the whole assembly house. So, what? Oh, Karna, her son. Forget about that one. Karna, her son, was killed. And she's, you know, and so she had a lot to complain about. Yet, what she did, actually, the first thing she did after she recounted these things was actually very interesting. She asked for more. And it's an interesting verse, the 25th verse. Evipada santu takshashwa tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatshad apuna bhavadarshanam. She says, let these things happen, tatra tatra jagat guru, O Lord of the universe. She understood Krishna was the Lord of the universe. So she says, let these things happen again and again. Oh my God. I don't think I'd have the courage. Like Prabhupada said, we should not pray for that. Devotee one time asked Prabhupada, you know, should we pray for more miseries? And Prabhupada said, it's miserable enough. Don't pray for more. So it's not that we imitate Queen Kunti in that way, because she was ready for it. But I basically pray for no more.
Yeah.
You know, every time we look at the email and the miseries of life, you know, people, well, not the phone is the easiest thing. The miseries, you know, people criticizing you, your own son on the email and everything like that. It's just like, ooh. Maybe I should just go to Radha Kund. You know, as the saying goes, goodbye, cruel world.
Mm-hmm.
There was actually a song like that, isn't it? Goodbye, cruel world. And anyway, so she was asking for more. She said, Bhavadam Darshanam Yachat. Because I've been seeing repeated birth and death. Abhuna Bhavadarshanam. I don't want to see repeated birth and death anymore. So she was, as Prabhupada quotes this verse, Vyavasayatma Bhuthi, Samadho Nabhadhiyate, that someone who is attached to sense enjoyment in opulent life doesn't have that one-pointed determination. But she had that one-pointed determination. What was that one point? I don't want to see birth and death anymore. I want to be your devotee. I want to go back to Godhead. And of course, Krishna says that also in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatma Gabudu here, a.k.a. Ha Kurunandana, Bhokshakas Turantas Chap. He says that those who are actually on this path, those who are devotees, and this is very similar to what Prabhupada says in his purport. I can't find that right now. But Prabhupada says in his purport that basically only one who is determined at one point like that or disgusted with the material world. So this verse states that those who are on this path are one-pointed and their determination is one. But those who are attached to the center, their mind is many branches. They go off in many, many different directions. So Queen Kunti basically in the first prayer. That's the first prayer, but the first one of the series, there's three verses that are very instructive in this regard. She says again and again, let this happen. And then the second verse, she actually talks about things that people are attached to in this world and how you have to get rid of certain attachments. She says, Janmaishraya Shrutasya Shivireta Mana Dapuma. She says that we're people in this world are attached to their so-called birth. Actually, that even applies in the Krishna conscious movement. You know, you would find people bragging, you know, I'm a Prabhupada disciple. That's the same thing. You know? I'm not saying it's bad to be a disciple of Prabhupada. I mean, everybody should follow Prabhupada. But just to be initiated by Prabhupada doesn't make you a Prabhupada disciple. To be a Prabhupada disciple means to be disciplined by Prabhupada. Actually, Prabhupada said that's the meaning of disciple. Shash Datu. Datu means like the root. Shash means discipline. You know, Prabhupada gave the example of Shastra and Shastra. Shastra means the words of the spiritual master. Shastra means getting in the stick. So so to be a disciple of Prabhupada means actually to be disciplined by Prabhupada. To be loyal to Prabhupada, to serve Prabhupada, and all those other things. I mean, that, follow Prabhupada's instructions. Not that you make up a Prabhupada that you think was Prabhupada or is Prabhupada. So, so anyway, people are proud sometimes, you know, I'm Prabhupada disciple, but actually you have to act like that. And so we're proud of our birth. Of course, in the Western world, we don't have too much to be proud of as far as our birth. Like, of course, people get into this whole roots thing. Like nowadays, you can send a little swab from your cheek into the genetic people, and they can tell you, you know, where you came from. Just like I had a dog. His name was Pepe.
Yeah.
He was a purebred Chihuahua, Mexican Chihuahua. And he came with a whole list of his dams and sires. That doesn't mean damn it, but it means, you know, the mothers and fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers, all the way back to the original Chihuahua. the Adi Chihuahua, you know. Probably all the way back. If they had it all the way back, they'd be back to Krishna, of course. Krishna, not Chihuahua. So all the way back. And so people, you know, even the people born in Western countries with actually no some scars are actually proud of their birth. And they want to trace their birth back to wherever it goes back. And so Jain Maheshwarya, and you know, people are attached to excuse me. Opulence and money. Aishwarya, you know, not only money, but opulence, you know, having a nice car, driving around in a nice car. I mean, just like when I was young, you would drive around in a MG Midget and wave to everybody, you know. You thought we were opulent. Aishwarya, and then Shrutashra, someone who is very educated, who thinks they're very intelligent, more intelligent than the other, because it makes you proud. And then Shriya, one who is very beautiful, attractive, physically. So Queen Kunti talks like that, and she says, "Naibarhar achit abibatatam vai twamakinshana gotra," that you can only be understood by those who are devoid of all those attachments, twamakinshana gotra. So that's the second verse. And the third verse is very interesting. Namo kinshana vittaya nivritta gunavrittaye. Atmaramaya Shantaya Kaivalya Pataye Namaha. You are the property, she says, of the materially impoverished. Doesn't mean that we have to be externally materially impoverished, but feeling basically Nirmana Moha Jitta Sangha Dosha, as Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Gita, Avyatma Nitya Nivritta Kama. That means having no hope of enjoyment of the material world or understanding nothing is mine. Everything belongs to Krishna. Shivashamidam saram yakacha jagajam jagat. Tenajikdena bunjada magriha kashasvidana. Everything is owned and controlled by you, Krishna. You're just lending me things in the meantime. So I have nothing. I have nothing. So anyway, she says, you are the property of the materially impoverished. And even though you are self-satisfied, this is actually interesting too, regarding the Jiva Dharma, that Krishna is Atmaram, that means he's self-satisfied. But for his devotees, he gives up his Atmaram nature, which is really interesting. In other words, he's hankering after the love of his devotees, especially, you know, the pure devotees we're talking about. I don't think Krishna's hankering after me, but it's like the gopis, like in the intimate Vrindavan pastimes, Krishna gives up his Atmaram nature. And he becomes dependent upon the love of his devotee. He becomes controlled. Instead of being swarat, like we find in the Bhagavatam, it describes that Krishna's swarat, he's independent. He becomes aswarat, you know, which means he's not independent anymore because he's dependent by, he's controlled by pure devotional service. It's one of the qualities listed by Rupa Goswami as pure devotional service. So anyway, so if we really want to become Krishna conscious, if, you know, you have to ask yourself that question, do you really want to be Krishna conscious? Then we have to come to that point of Twamakinshana Gotara. having no hope of anything in this mature world, not being attached to anything, and it takes time. I wish it was so easy. I mean, many times we can tell people about the miseries of the material world, but they don't become detached so easily. So it takes time. We have to go through these experiences, like Chitraketu is going through, like Queen Kunti is going through, like even Narada Muni went through as a five-year-old boy, seeing his mother die and just being left with nobody. He was born as a Shudrani's son. And nobody. He just had to walk, five-year-old boy, wandering through the forest. Can you imagine that? As we were mentioning yesterday, this is pretty much a common denominator in the lives of all these great devotees. There is quite a bit of like intense struggle and loss and, you know, I would even say trauma in many cases in the lives of these devotees. And that really helps them progress. And even, of course, even you say, even the pure devotees go through that. What is the you may ask, what is the reason for that? Because they're already pure. The reason is it glorifies them. It glorifies their devotion. I mean, even Krishna left Vrindavan, and it was the most traumatic thing for the gopis. And that brought them closer to Krishna. So even in the spiritual world, you have traumatic things happening between Krishna and his devotees. But it strengthens the relationship, brings them closer. And Bipralamba Seva, of course, is the most intense way to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyway, so we have a lot to look forward to. But for the devotees, that sort of intense thing actually is a source of ecstasy because it brings them closer to Krishna. Like in the case of Queen Kunti. Okay, I don't want to be too negative about these things. So we have to end class now. Bon Sankirtan. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari Hari Gaur.